We're finally back. It's me, Gustav, and
Johan, as usual.
Exactly. And today, it is the 30th of December, 2023, the day before, I was about to say Christmas Day, but it's the New Year's Day.
That's correct.
And we, exactly. And we will wrap up the year and also make our best efforts in predicting the future, looking a bit ahead. And thinking what may happen. But first and foremost, we will go through a couple of things that we think are the biggest takeaways from the year. Right.
Yes. So let's start with some reflecting on 2023, and then we're looking ahead a little bit after that.
Talk about 2023, the year in fintech. And what is the first thing we can think of? What do you think of when you think of 2023 in fintech?
I think we all maybe think of the Silicon Valley Bank explosion during the spring of 2023. That affected quite a lot in the whole venture and investment and fintech ecosystem. Everything from valuations and the money available and risk profiles from investors and banks. So I think that was quite a big happening that everybody was talking about during the spring.
Yeah, I think it was back in March and it was really big thing then. But now it has been kind of quiet about that. But I don't know. Do you know the current status of this whole shebang?
No, actually not. I think government in US or the regulatory organs was handling it quite well, I think. So they were moving over customers and try their best to keep the customers' money secured. But I think a lot of investors and money managers out there lost a lot of money. So especially here in Sweden, we had a lot of pension funds that were invested in this type of players. And I think none of the Swedes that are listening in to this can recall that it was quite a lot of losses that those pension funds got from this crash. So it affected us twofold, I think.
Exactly. Now that you say it, I remember it. It was quite a lot of buzz and writings in the media about the pension fund who... One of the biggest ones that lost a lot in this Silicon Valley Bank crash. And just to remember what it was about, they had, was it obligations that became too expensive when the interest went up? So they were forced to sell and that they were then having to realize big losses. And that was the main problem here.
Yeah, I think you could simplify it that they try to lock up their money long-term in a very low interest rate environment. And then the interest rate changed to become much higher. And then they got squeezed by that change and they couldn't react to it quick enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wonder if there will be more of this now in these turbulent times, which it still is, right? Still, we're far from over in this whole term. And shall we move on?
Yes. Let's do it.
Topic. And when I think of 2023, I of course think of the reemergence in crypto, and lots of cryptocurrencies are up quite a lot. To mention a few, I think Bitcoin around 300%, Ethereum around 100, and Solana about 1000%. But it's not been just the glory and good and glory days in crypto. It's also a tough year, I think, for many. And we have seen a lot of startups going bankrupt or basically shutting down. Even startups that have raised big amounts, talking about like tens of millions of dollars, have shut down because they have seen it has been too hard to grow and to realize their business and so on. So that's something that I think of. And then, of course, the whole thing around the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange, Binance, and their CEO, who is a big personality in crypto, CC, his name is, and how he had to step down and how Binance had to pay $4.3 billion in fines for violating regulations, when specifically anti-money laundering and such. And I think also CC had to pay $50 million himself. So I don't know what is... It is shockingly large amount of monies. But it's also even more shocking, I think, that Binance, they have so insane much money that they can just pay this. And at least so far, they seem to be not affected by that. Well, that's really interesting.
Oh yeah, no, I think like maybe this could be the like the last cleanup in the crypto space, and hopefully we can get rid of all this trouble we have had in the last years with FTX, the scandal about that, and now with Binance. So let's hope that this is the last big cleanup, and let's see what 2024 can bring in with maybe. Is it like enough with regulations now? Is it regulated enough for the large players to really dare to step in, like with the JP Morgans and similar players to with Bitcoin ETFs and so on that is in the rumors? So hopefully this could actually be a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also one of the companies that went bankrupt, Celsius, they have now finally, after soon 2 years of court work and lots of lawyers and doing stuff, now announced that they have a plan where people who lost a lot of money or still have the money with them can claim them back through Coinbase. So that's good. Also, like a big thing that has now come to an end, hopefully soon. I also read that Sam Bankman-Fried will have his trial. I don't know how to call it, but in March he will go to court and predicted to face a long time in prison, basically. So I think that is also a good thing for the whole industry, that now there will be real examples of people who have been behaving bad in crypto that gets to face penalties, and hopefully that will show the way for or not show the way for others to do more of these shady things and stay away from, because regulators, it's not this thing where you can think of crypto as some kind of space which has been where the regulators can't touch you. They will get you, like, and now we have proof of it as well, big proofs. So we'll see. But what other things do you think of, Johan?
No, but I think there had been some news about Apple and Goldman Sachs, a bit trouble in their collaboration and the possibility of a breakup. So for those not knowing, Goldman Sachs is the one that provides the underlying financial services for Apple, especially in the US with the Apple Card, payment cards and so on. And I think this could just highlight a bit how hard I think it is for the large financial service players to actually collaborate with the more fast-moving tech players out there and so on. That is what can look like a good collaboration on paper. I think it's hard in reality because it's much difference when it comes to culture, technology, knowledge, and so on. So I think that could be one of the reasons why these collaborations are not going as planned. But I think still Apple will continue providing fintech services for the users, but with other type of collaborators, maybe smaller players, or they move more things in-house, like acquiring licenses themselves to get rid of the large banks. What do you think, Gustav?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I thought that this was a really, when the news came about this, I remember, I think both of you and I worked at, we were consultants at the same place, and there was this news about the Goldman and the Apple collaboration and so on. And I thought it would be really good, but apparently it looks like it hasn't been that successful, or it has, but some other reasons for breaking up. But, and it was not a long time ago that they announced that they had this big interest account with the largest or highest interest in the US, basically. I wonder what has happened with that. Maybe all the others came close to equal interest percentages, and basically there is no reason for anyone to move to Apple then apart from a nice UI. I don't know. But we'll see. We'll probably come more information in the future. Another thing which we talked a lot about in this podcast in the early episodes was PSD2. But now, during this year, early this year, there were proposals from European Commission on the PSD3, which we talked about also in early episodes of this podcast, that it will probably come a PSD3 in the future. So now it seems like we're not far it's not that far away anymore. And we'll see what the PSD3 will be like, if it is driving another wave of work from banks around in Europe that they need to comply. Remember when PSD2 came, there were lots of banks recruiting consultants to help them with all kinds of things to be complying with the PSD2. And I assume there will be something similar here. But what impact it has on end users and so on, I'm not sure about yet. What do you think?
No, but I think there's a lot of room for improvement with the current PSD2 regulations, especially when it comes to how it actually would become implemented at the different banks, because there are so large differences between the banks on how they had implemented and approached this regulation. So some banks has done it in a really good way, some banks has done it in a less good way. And I've been working a little bit with BI connections recently for some of the banks, and especially in the B2B space, like for corporate accounts and so on. That's like an untouched area for many of the banks, and that doesn't work too well at all. I think if that could be one of the areas that PSD3 could improve a bit, I think that would be great for the transparency and so on in the market. But I think on the consumer side, it has actually helped quite a lot, especially when it comes to payments. I think we don't reflect on it too much, I think, as a consumers, but nowadays you can actually choose to pay with account to account on a lot of the online providers or e-commerce providers out there. And I think PSD2 is one of the drivers behind that. And I think that's a good thing in many perspectives, both like geopolitically, that we're not so dependent on American providers like Visa and MasterCard for doing online payments anymore. We actually have quite good choices that are not too heavily relying on American providers. So that's a good thing with PSD2 that I think really had got a great market share on online payments already.
Yeah. And PSD3, the little that I have read about it is all about continuing the work in PSD2 and further improve it and fine tune it and so on. So yeah, it will be interesting to follow. Maybe we can have some specific episode later on next year on PSD3 and what it will mean. Yeah, I think it would be actually really interesting to dig into. Anyway, do we have any more reflections, or should we move into some predictions?
Let's move into some predictions, I think. Do you want to get started, Gustav, with some from your side?
Yes. I keep to what I was talking about a little bit before when it comes to crypto. And I think that 2024, 2025, 2026 will, and ever, I think they have a big chance to become really big years for crypto, actually. As you mentioned, we have had this cleanup with lots of centralized players, such as Binance, regulatory cleanup and fine payments and this and that, but also what most people think about, I think, is FTX and Celsius and Voyager, and there are many more. What they all have in common is that they are centralized, basically like any traditional fintech is. But what you have in crypto is also the opportunity to be decentralized. And I think that will be thriving a lot. One part of it is that it becomes easier to use, better functionality and more and better user-friendly applications and so on. And then this whole narrative that now people know what can happen when you put money into centralized players that act bad. And I think that narrative that they will move away from that and start using decentralized applications is something that will grow significantly during coming years. So that's one prediction that I have. The other prediction is that I think there will be another big blowout in prices of crypto in the coming years. And I think we see in May, there is this Bitcoin halving, basically, when the inflation rate, call it simplified, in Bitcoin is cut in half. Then, as you mentioned earlier, the Bitcoin ETF. And then we have the rise of Solana, which is great, gaining a lot of traction, not just in price, but also in adoption when it comes to transactions per second, number of projects being built, used, and so on. And all this together, I think it will lead to a big increase in price with another hype, the ones that we have seen 2014, 2017, 2020, 2021. Exactly what this new hype will be around. It feels like it has always been some buzzword. It was ICOs, and then it was NFTs, and then it was this. And what this will be, I'm not sure about, but I think will be huge again. Many will make a lot of money and many will lose a lot of money. So that's one big prediction that I have when it comes to crypto. Or maybe it was two, but it's a little bit summarizing the thoughts that I have. Do you agree or disagree with those?
I think I mainly agree. I'm not following the crypto space too much in details at the moment, but I've seen the latest news the last couple of weeks with the increases in prices and so on. So I think definitely more attention is getting into the space. And I think when the large players with the ETFs and so on, when they are starting to move for real, I think that will affect the prices and volume that are getting into the ecosystem. But I would be a bit interested in hearing your thoughts, Gustav, on, let's focus maybe on the largest free cryptos. I think it's still Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana, right? Or would you say that those are the three major ones?
Yeah, then you have a big other tokens. One is USDT, stable. And then you have Binance. But I think the three biggest people think about are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana.
But and what would be your, if you would describe those three in with one sentence each, like what would be the differences between them? Because it's not like a one winner will rule the whole crypto space, right? There will be plenty of them, and there are some differences between them. But how could you simplify the explanation of those three?
But I think it's a great question. I think the Bitcoin can be thought of as a digital gold. It's very scarce. It's very limited in supply. It is hard to build stuff on it, and it is made like that by design, and it's mainly there to keep its or increase its value because of its limited supply. Bitcoin digital gold, and then Ethereum I would describe as similar to Bitcoin, but adding another layer where it's really easy to build applications on top of Ethereum. And all those cryptocurrencies, many of the cryptocurrencies around in the world are built as a token on top of Bitcoin, the Ethereum blockchain. And so it's like an app store, but with crypto in it, you could say, and a decentralized one. And then it still is the biggest layer one, but it is that because it's the first one. So it has this big first mover advantage. It's where everyone think about. And then Solana, you could think of Ethereum, but with some other characteristics and improvements, simplifying for developers to build on it and so on. So I think many developers today like Solana a lot. And that's part of why it's gaining so much traction, because in Ethereum, in order to scale, you have many different layer twos. So you have solutions that are built on top of Ethereum that helps Ethereum to scale. But on Solana, it's all built in one. So you don't have those layer twos. And for a developer, I think that coming into Ethereum ecosystem can be really challenging, because you have all those like tens or hundreds of layer twos written in different programming languages, and it's just a jungle of things to understand, and which layer two should I build on, and so on. But in Solana, you have it all in one, and you don't have to think that much. Who will win? I don't think there will be one winner. I think both will actually live side by side. But who becomes the really big one? I'm not sure, actually. I think it's equal competition at the moment. So yeah, maybe a bit longer than one sentence each, but the Bitcoin, digital gold, Ethereum, decentralized app store, Solana, trying to improve decentralized app store, and something like that. Was it simple enough to follow along?
I think so, yes. Thanks.
And what do we have more? You have some predictions, right?
Yeah, so my predictions would be in another space, still a very hyped one. It's the AI space. A lot of things are happening during the year. ChatGPT got released a little bit over a year ago, so it was in 2022. But I think the real adoption was happening during this year. So we have got all these new models. We have got a lot of money into the AI space. A lot of the large technology providers have chosen their collaborators or in-house models that they will use going forward. And I think this will actually affect the fintech space quite a lot. But my take would be that it would actually mostly benefit the large incumbents, is my prediction. So I think the large incumbents, for example, in the Nordics, the large Nordic banks, Swedbank, Handelsbank and SEB, Nordea, for example, I think they will actually be the winners of this because they sit with the customer connections already. They sit on a lot of data about the customer and they have the major connections with the customers. And I think they can utilize this quite good with the new AI services out there. So I think actually where you have the most profit to get is actually by implementing it into the large banks. For example, in customer services, in risk assessment before handing out credits, by automated how customer can get information about from different services in the existing interfaces. But I think actually here we will see a lot of traction if the players can move quick enough. That would be the big if. I think they have a lot of things to win if they do move, but the question is if they can move and if they will be allowed to move because there are still a lot of regulatory issues. I think by using this type of models, we just recently in the last week saw New York Times suing both OpenAI and Microsoft for they say that the OpenAI models have been using text from New York Times in the training of the models. And it's a big gray space, I think, right now of will large companies dare to use this type of models because the one that do use them, they will be the one that gets sued first, I think. So it's a bit, do you dare to do it? Because I think there's a lot of winnings to do if you can implement it. And especially looking at the large banks, like how they're handling risk assessments and that type of stuff today is so many manual consultancy hours and internal hours that they are spending on this that I think is perfect for our AI engine to help out with to decrease cost and improve efficiency and so on. But the question is if they will dare to do it. What is your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's, I agree. I think also I agree on your thesis on that it will benefit the banks, the large ones that has the contact already with the customer and so on and all the capital and so on. But maybe I think that the actual work to make something significant within banking will maybe start as in many other things in fintech and banking, like at startups that will build sort of a solution that is not meant to be directly for a consumer, but meant to be as a part of the banking infrastructure or the back end of the bank. And then when one or a few reach some significant success in some niche area in banking, there will be a battle of which of the big banks who acquired that company, basically. And I see that is the future here. I think, and that way you can also avoid the big regulatory risks a bit. You can let the small player with not as much stake on the table to take the more risky things. I don't think that New York Times will care that much about the small little player that's doing something. But when it comes to a big player, a big bank and so on, there will be more trouble. That's a little bit how I see that this will evolve. But I very much agree with you that I will be making banks more efficient, stronger, better. And there's still so many digitalized processes I hear from friends that works at banks that it's like they're still in the 90s in many cases. And it's just going on. And I think it will change. It takes time still.
So one very good thing for banks, I think, is when it comes to the technology side, that they can use AI assistant to help and improve their in-house development team, because a lot of banks are still using mainframes and all the coding languages and so on that is hard to attract talent to. But with AI assistants, you can actually like live translate old languages into new languages. So you can actually expand the developer pool quite a lot. So I think that could help banks a lot if they include this, because I think one of the big challenges for banks today is that they can't attract the talent they need to do this type of transformational things everywhere in their organizations. But with the help of AI assistant, I think they can maybe attract the right type of talent, and the talent can use the languages they like the most, and then the AI translate it back to the old mainframe languages and Java and so on that the new talent do not want to work with.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And another thing on this topic is, I think, is Klarna and its CEO Sebastian Siemiatkowski, who's been out making provocative tweets or X's, I don't know what to say anymore, tweets on X or something like that. And they are about AI and how Klarna is working with AI and how that will transform the banking industry and how you as a customer will talk to an AI when you are asking for mortgages, get those recommendations on what kind of mortgage you should have and this and that and interest, everything, like what interest rate you should have the right to have and so on. So, but we have not yet seen anything of that. And I don't know how much different that will make in the end. Still this thing that many people like to talk to human person when it comes to taking loans and so on. Of course, in smaller loans, like consumer loans, maybe below $10,000 or something like that. But when it comes to those big things, when people are lending like $500,000, $1 million and so on. I don't know if this AI, effective AI communication thing will actually be that, what people want to talk to, but maybe I'm wrong. What do you think?
I think it depends. I think it depends on your level of knowledge, maybe going into those type of discussions. I think there's a lot of huge part of the population that like to talk with a human about this type of stuff because they might not have done the research themselves or think it's quite scary with the mortgages and so on. But then I think it's also a quite big part of the population that thinks it's very unnecessary to talk with a person that kind of do not have access to all your data. You need to bring paper with your salary statement to them and so on. And I think those type of populations, maybe I am more in that part than the other. I would actually prefer to not talk with a human and rather talk with an AI model that have all my data in place and can give me an exact answer to all my questions right off the box. And I would actually more trust that than a human working in a bank office.
Yeah, I agree. But the bank, they don't want their AI to be so smart that they give you the best interest rate you could ever get. They want just to give what you think is good for you, but still have a good margin on the bank side.
Exactly. But I think the one that dares to do it, they will actually win a lot of customers. But then I think the majority of the population will probably prefer to talk with a human about this type of topics.
Yeah, I agree.
But should we move to the last part of the conversation here today, the flip and flops of the years, of this year?
Yes, it's our new thing here, to give some flips and the flops. And a flip is a good thing, right? And the flop is the bad thing.
Yes. Do you want to get started?
Yeah, we have already mentioned the things I'm going to mention, we have already talked a little bit about. But my biggest flop would be Binance and CC and their incredibly large fine of $4.3 billion. But this has been expected. There is a long list of weird things that have happened with Binance over the last, I don't know, what, 2 years. There are chief executives that have gone fired. They're quitting and making announcements about Binance and talking about how bad it is and this and that. And there is like one big paper of like maybe 30 bad things that has happened to Binance over the last 2 years. So it's not like a shock. This is more like this was expected. So I took another one as the biggest flop because I wanted to be a bit more unexpected. And that was what, for me at least, what Apple plus Goldman was. I was a bit surprised by that. Maybe people in the traditional banking industry were not, I'm not sure, like people who have been in the industry for 20 years, maybe they saw this coming, but I didn't. I thought this was like a really good potential collaboration with Apple as a distributor of the digital banking and Goldman in the back and with the banking knowledge and all of that. But apparently, once again, it's proved that these kind of collaborations cross industry are harder, a lot harder than what you may think. So that's my biggest flop of the year. Do you have any comment on that one?
No, I think it's quite interesting to see why or understand more why this type of collaboration do not succeed, because on paper it looks like a perfect fit, but apparently there's quite a lot of issues with it. So it will be interesting to follow a bit more and learn more about what did work and what did not work.
I can just think of the issues when it comes to culture. I can think of that as one issue, but I'm just speculating. But my flip, the good thing, at least for Solana, which is my flip then, Solana has risen more than 1,000% this year, gone up from the graveyard, like it's really been dead. And at the end of last year, when it was this whole thing with Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX, and who they owned, Sam Bankman-Fried owned the FTX and one or more of their few hundred corporations that they had under that umbrella. They owned a significant amount of the total supply of Solana, like a lot. I think it was like 20% or something. And I thought that was one of the reasons why it went down so much, because now people thought that, okay, they will liquidate and sell everything and so on. And that is what has happened. There have been several announcements with the selling of Solana, but the market reacts opposite. Like they see it as a risk off and the price of Solana goes up, not just because of that, but also a lot because of true adoption and growth in the platform Solana itself when it comes to users, transactions per second, developers building stuff and so on. And it's halfway up to the previous all-time high, which was at before the Sam Bankman read the crash and all of that. So we'll see what happens. Maybe it takes over the place as the second biggest crypto platform in the world and comes before Ethereum within a year. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't think you should underestimate the power of Ethereum in another perspective. So that's my flip. Do you have any comment on that one, or do you want to jump into your flips and flops?
Not too many comments. I think it's, as I said before, it would be interesting to see. And I think the most important factor, I think, is when the large institutions dare to enter the space again. So that will be a major unlock for the whole crypto space, I think, if that happens during the spring of 2024.
Yeah. One thing on that part specifically is when all these big players, BlackRock and this and that, when they join the industry with the ETFs, maybe they will act like some kind of like approval that it's okay for others to join in some way, maybe through collaborations with them, because then they have already built this whole foundation of regulatory compliance processes. So I hope if they don't, we are in another even bigger issue later on. But yeah, I'm curious to know what's your flips and flops.
Yeah, so my flop of the year, I was sitting here before this recording and thinking and logged in into my internet bank. And then I realized like my biggest flop of the year is still the large incumbent, how bad they are on digitalizing the customer interaction. So for example, like when doing things with my mortgage, I still need to call a person, the bank office, to handle all the details of refinancing or setting new interest rate and so on. It's super limited of what I can do in the internet bank. It's one third of the things I want to do, I can do by myself. The rest I need to talk with that person. That I think is not okay in 2023. And this is the largest bank in Sweden I'm talking about. So it's not a small one and so on. And the other stuff is like all the communication the banks provide me with. I get a notification, I log into the internet bank, and then I open a PDF with the information. So it's also like, why do they need to provide me with a PDF of the information that it gets like a pop-up within the app, that outside app, like just write the communication in the app where I'm already logged in with a bank ID and in a secure way and so on. So I think that's my biggest flop of the year, like how far behind they still are, the large banks.
Do you believe that this will be your flop, right? Flop.
Yeah.
In 2020, approaching 2025 again, or do you think it will be fixed?
I don't think it will be fixed, unfortunately, but it will be the biggest flip next year if they fix it. They have the opportunity, but, and maybe AI is the enabler for some of this, but I my hopes are not too high, to be honest.
I see. And what about your flip?
Yeah, so I actually had two flips. So starting with a topic we talked a little bit about in the beginning of this conversation. So my flip number one would be account-to-account payments, how that really has been getting a lot of market traction during this year. I think everywhere in both apps and e-commerce sites, I can now choose to pay either with card or account-to-account through open banking payments. Or with Swish actually as well. Like I can pay with Swish in many places. So as a consumer, this is great for me because I have a lot of different options. And it's also very convenient to not be able, do not need to hunt for a physical plastic card to get the numbers from that and so on. So I think that has been a great change that has been happening quite slowly. We have been able to pay with the account for many years, but I think it's just now recently we have seen a huge adoption of it. And now you can nearly pay everywhere with that, from everything from the subway tickets in the app to different e-commerce sites. So that has been a great thing for me. What do you think about that, Gustav?
Yeah, I agree. I tend to pay lots of my monthly bills now with account-to-account payments directly. And I also like that when I buy things online with Klarna, that is the kind of the default option. And I never use the credit thing with Klarna. So I always pay with account-to-account Klarna. And I think it's great. It's making everything a little bit cheaper for the whole mass that don't have to pay credit card fees and so on. So that's great. I hope it comes more of this.
And I think it's hard to forget, but I think it's a lot of thanks to the PSD2 regulations, like that this has a lot of with the underlying infrastructure for this. So I guess we can thank the EU for this, partly at least.
Right. Finally, you see the fruits of the work.
And then the last flip I had, the number two, I think it's actually Apple, and how impressed I am of how they have been able to integrate financial services everywhere in their ecosystem. So everything from me, I think I will pay like 99% of my payments during this year has been through Apple Pay, physical payments. I don't even recall using my plastic card this year. I don't even take a wallet with me anymore. So the majority of the payments, the few other percentage is from cash payments when I'm abroad and so on, I think. Otherwise, it's just Apple Pay. And also how they have been able to integrate this into apps. So like when you pay in other apps, like Apple Pay is my default in those as well. It's also how you can pay Apple services with Apple Pay. So everything from your Apple storage subscription, Apple TV, Apple Music, everything is connected to your Apple Pay account. And this is like the first step of becoming a real financial player, I think, because it's just so smooth and it just works. So that's actually a flip of how impressed I am of how integrated they have connected all their services and also how smooth it is when you're using the Apple ecosystem at least.
I agree on that. Last year, I think I kept my little pocket of cards with me all the time because there were not every merchant that accepted Apple Pay and so on. Now, I never bring it because of that reason. But I bring it sometimes because I need it still to prove my identity.
When is that? I never face those situations.
You know, maybe it's gone now, but earlier this year, I had the issue when I pick up packages, but I use digital ID for that and it works 99% of the time. Maybe it's just a habit of bringing it, but not needed anymore. Soon we really don't need the cards. So now it's all digital cards, of course, but what I'm talking about is a physical card. And now I think it's just a matter of people's mindsets and habits to change because it's all there. It's very easy. So yeah. And when you talk about this Apple Pay and so on, maybe I just came to think of it when we talked the whole flop with Apple plus Goldman. Maybe it is Apple's strategy to work close with one of the biggest fintechs or banks in the world and learn from them and what they have learned, how they do stuff and what doesn't, and thought about how they could do it in a better way. Then they dumped the collaboration and move on. Maybe that's the strategy.
Yes. It wouldn't surprise me.
That is of summarizing our year or the fintech year and our predictions. Do we have any final stuff you want?
No, I think this was everything. It has been a semi-exciting year, right? It's been a little bit low on news and so on compared to 2020, 2021, when we had like the peak of fintech investments and hype and so on. So hopefully we'll see a bit more action in the space in the coming years. That's my wish.
Yeah, I agree. But then this is wrapping up the whole year, not just for us, but for everything. I don't think we will do any more episodes this year, but next year we will, for sure. With that said, let's thank everyone who is listening on this episode and see you next year.
Yes, see you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.